Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites metopera.org and classicfm.com. Today's questions were inspired by a recent trip to Italy, with special thanks to Jack and Olivia from Cary, North Carolina. Question number one, which of the following is true about the musical term aria? A, an aria is essentially the primary choral part of a musical production. B, the woman with the most of these in an opera is labeled a prima donna. C, arias are always sung a cappella without any orchestration. D, all the above are true about the term aria. Or E, none of the above is true about the term aria. So what is an aria anyway? And question number two, whom among the following is not a recognized opera composer? Was that A, Mozart, B, Chopin, or C, Wagner? So which of these three famous composers never wrote an opera? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May 30th. Well, it was on this very day in 1956 that Buddy Holly was inspired to write "That'll Be the Day" after he saw the John Wayne movie The Searchers, 1956 today. And it was 63 years ago today, 1962, that Benny Goodman led the first American jazz band to play in the Soviet Union. That was back in 1962, today. And in country music news, we have this article titled, "The Grand Old Opry, Country's Crown Jewel. The vaunted radio program put uniquely American music at center stage." This is published in Smithsonian Magazine, June 2025 issue. Lindsay Kusiak. On December 10, 1927, radio host George D. Hay announced the end of an hour-long opera program on Nashville's WSM radio. Next up was the much more down-home barn dance. For the past hour, we have been listening to the music taken largely from the Grand Opera, Hay ad-libbed. But from now on, we will present the Grand Old Opry. It was an inadvertent and fateful christening for what would become a cultural institution, and eventually the longest-running radio program in this country, introducing tens of millions of listeners to a distinctively American-born genre of music. As Hay playfully commented, the Opry offered a stark contrast to other highbrow programs populating the airways, swapping symphonies and arias for jaunty renditions of old Anglo-Celtic, European, and African-American ballads. Played on the fiddle, banjo, and guitar, it was hoedown music, or as Hay lovingly called it, quote-unquote, hillbilly music. And with a radio boom already underway, Hay had chosen an exceptionally propitious time to share it. Commercial radio fever swept the nation, beginning in 1920, with more than 600 new stations emerging by the time the Opry premiered. As the Great Depression began, Hay's Salt of the Earth approach charmed the audience, while WSM made several ingenious business decisions that shaped popular music forever. First, WSM did the unthinkable amid a hemorrhaging economy, investing $250,000, that's $5.8 million today, to build the new radio tower. It was the tallest in the country and one of only three 50,000-watt clear channel towers in the United States. In 1939, the Grand Ole Opry joined NBC's radio network, transmitting the show to 125 stations. It wasn't long before the Opry's successes gained a big-time sponsor, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, maker of Camel cigarettes, which sponsored a USO-style tour starring several Opry stars. Called the Grand Ole Opry Camel Caravan, this troupe appeared exclusively for military members at bases throughout the U.S. and Central America during the summer of 1941, charming soldiers with toe-tapping hillbilly music and comedy from Minnie Pearl. In 1943, the Opry moved into the Ryman Auditorium, the city's largest venue at the time, and still the Saturday Night Showcase, featuring up-and-coming stars like Hank Williams and later Patsy Cline, Willie Nelson, and Loretta Lynn, sold out each week. It wasn't until 1974 that the Opry finally moved into its current home, the 4,440-seat Grand Ole Opry House. Today, the Grand Ole Opry has spent nearly 100 years as a country tastemaker, elevating stars like George Jones, Garth Brooks, Johnny Cash, and hundreds more. Thanks to this hardy institution and contributions by crossover artists like Beyoncé, country music continues to dominate the streaming charts and, in 1923, was declared the fastest-growing genre in popular music. Chris Botti's Nessun Dorma introduces our classical music news. It's titled, 10 of the World's All-Time Great Opera Composers. This is written by Matty Shaw Roberts on the 13th of January, 2021, in ClassicFM.com. From the 16th to the 20th century, we celebrate 10 of opera's most influential voices, Composers have enjoyed writing operas since the late Renaissance. We imagine they must be rather fun to compose. Dramatic, exciting, often packed with the highest and lowest emotions, and the full spectrum of what the human voice can achieve. The genre really came alive in the Baroque era and continues to be the medium of choice for some of today's most celebrated composers. It also makes up some of the world's most famous classical music. Here are 10 of the greatest opera composers to have ever lived. Monteverdi, 1567 to 1643. Being a fantastically theatrical sort of guy, Monteverdi brought a spectrum of emotions, huge scenery, and intriguing plot lines to his pioneering operas. Then there's Handel, 1685 to 1759. Once described as a dramatic genius of the first order, was a prolific Baroque opera composer. Through the 1720s, he composed Italian operatic masterpieces for London stages that were often based on classical stories. Then there's Mozart, 1756 to 1791, is where things start to get really hummable in opera. In typical prodigy style, young Wolfgang composed his first opera when he was only 11. But it's the work of 20-something Mozart as a young man enamored with Rome that we really cherish today. Then there's Rossini, 1792 to 1868, was an astonishingly fruitful composer of opera, writing 39 of them in his lifetime. But having produced a whirlwind of operas and still just in his 30s, Rossini laid down his opera pen forever. Perhaps he had had enough of dealing with high-maintenance artists, as he was once reported to have remarked, "How wonderful opera would be if there were no singers." Donizetti, 1797 to 1848, with a huge 65 of them under his belt, was the most significant figure in Italian opera after the death of Bellini in 1835. 1813 to 1901, Verdi's title as the king of all Italian opera composers is beyond dispute. Even Puccini couldn't quite live up to his predecessor. Verdi had a phenomenally expressive range and capacity to write an unforgettable melody. Wagner, 1813 to 1883, redefined the scope and scale of opera. In place of the usual series of set piece arias and choruses, he created enormous opera structures from a series of recurring musical leitmotifs used to represent a character or theme. Imagine those two ominous notes from Jaws for a modern-day example. Then there's Puccini, 1858 to 1924, was the leading Italian opera composer of his generation and an expert in telling tragedies. His final opera, Turandot, left unfinished at the time of his death, was a resounding success and contains the unforgettable tenor aria Nessun Dorma, which achieved widespread thanks to the resonant pipes of Luciano Pavarotti. Then there was Strauss. 1864 to 1949 was the most significant German opera composer of the first half of the 20th century. Married to a soprano, Strauss had an impeccable understanding of the soprano voice and wrote extensively for it. And last but not least, 1858 to 1944, Ethel Smith, 20th century composer and suffragette, wrote 6 operas. And for more than a century, her opera, Der Wald, was the only opera about a woman composer to ever grace the stage of New York's prestigious Metropolitan Opera. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Five Things to Know Before Buying an Acoustic Guitar. Let us help find the best acoustic guitar for you. This is published in BBC Music Magazine, May the 1st, 2025. Thinking about learning how to play guitar, but bamboozled by the huge choice of acoustic guitars on the market? Here are our top tips to help you choose your first guitar or a guitar for your child. We've teamed up with Play Music Today, PMT, to bring you a selection of the best beginner-friendly guitars, plus some shopping tips to help your cash go further, leaving you to concentrate on getting to know your new instrument. Number one, choose the best type of acoustic guitar for you. You've already narrowed it down to an acoustic guitar rather than an electric guitar, but did you know that there are a number of different types of acoustic guitars? You'll need to choose between a classical guitar, also known as a Spanish guitar, equipped with nylon strings, or a steel string guitar. Classical guitars, as the name suggests, tend to give a more mellow, softer sound, more suited for classical music, whereas the more popular steel string guitars are better suited for more modern rock and pop music. Number two, acoustic or electroacoustic. There are also electroacoustic guitars, which are acoustic guitars with a built-in preamp, meaning that you can plug them into an amp if you want to perform live, as well as using guitar pedals. These typically also feature a cutaway shape, which allows the player to access the upper frets more easily. Number three, shop the right size for you. Generally speaking, the size of guitar should match your body size. There's no point trying to get a six-year-old to play a full-size guitar. For the youngest children, a ukulele is perfect. A one-half-size guitar is usually good for children 7 to 11, whereas a three-quarter-size guitar is usually a good fit for children aged between 12 and 15, after which they might prefer to use a full-size guitar. This is subjective to body size, of course, and both children and adults of different builds may find that they want to use a smaller or larger guitar than generally recommended. For example, three-quarter size guitars are growing in popularity and are also great for traveling. Number four, don't forget the accessories. At a minimum, most shops recommend that you pick up a guitar tuner, a guitar pick or two, also known as a plectrum, and a spare pack of acoustic guitar strings when you're getting set up. If you're planning on traveling with your guitar, for example, to and from lessons, a sturdy guitar case comes highly recommended too. A guitar strap will also allow you to play while standing. Be sure to factor in these guitar accessories when it comes to budgeting for your first guitar. And last but not least, number five, check out secondhand guitars and shop savvy. A new guitar doesn't have to cost the earth. Secondhand guitars are a great way to get a quality instrument at a reduced price. Ready for even more tips? Find out more at the Acoustic Guitar Buying Guide.
Oh, it was beautiful, magical, and all the birds in the
Super Tramps, the Logic Soul Song, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's not like anything else I've written. I sank into it, and before I knew, there was nothing of me there. That's when magic happens. How Roger Hodgson created Supertramp's most ambitious song, and why he won't say what it means. This is published in Prague, a Louder, March the 20th, 2025, written by David West. Inspired by the Beatles, a famous piece of classical music, and the post-war era, Fool's Overture isn't the band's longest song, but it's by far their most complex and intense. In 2017, Roger Hodgson told Prague how it took him 3 years to assemble 1977 Supertramp track Fool's Overture, which has stood the test of time as a result of its intensity and beauty, and became a mainstay of his solo career. The art of being an artist is to get out of the way and let something greater than our small little selves take control and run the show, says Roger Hodgson, the man behind Supertramp classics, including Dreamer, Breakfast in America, Fool's Overture, and The Logical Song, the song playing in the background right now. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of the following is true about the musical term aria? Is it A, an aria is essentially the primary choral part of a musical production? Is it B, the woman with the most of these in an opera is labeled a prima donna? Is it C, arias are always sung a cappella, without any orchestration? Or is it D, all the above are true about the term aria? Or is it E, none of the above is true about the term aria? Correct answer. Answer B, the woman with the most of these in an opera is labeled a prima donna. An aria is a musical piece for a single voice, typically accompanied by an orchestra, that is often found in operas, oratorios, and other large-scale vocal works. The word aria, by the way, comes from the Italian word for air. As noted in metopera.org, an aria is a self-contained piece for solo voice. In opera, arias mostly appear during a pause in dramatic action when a character is reflecting on their emotions. Most arias are lyrical, with a tune that can be hummed, and many arias include musical repetition. A prima donna is the first woman, and refers to the singer with the greatest number of arias in a Baroque opera. Since opera stars were notoriously high maintenance, the term prima donna later came to be applied to people who are demanding and self-centered, regardless of their gender or profession. Every aria is a song, but not every song is an aria. And one of the biggest differences comes down to context. An aria is part of a longer work, like an opera or large-scale work, such as an oratorio, while a song can stand alone. That said, with the rise of modern media, it is now common to hear arias outside their original operatic context, thanks to social media, film, and television. Take Nusendormov, originally composed for the opera Turandot by Puccini. It has since become a staple in popular music. Arias are often more elaborate and virtuosic, composed to showcase the soloist's voice and highlight a significant moment in dramatic narrative. In contrast, songs are typically more intimate, often featuring simple structures, and sometimes performed with just voice and piano. Despite these differences, both share a key similarity. They have lyrics and are composed to be sung, making them powerful vehicles for conveying emotion and storytelling. And the answer to our second question, whom among the following is not a recognized opera composer? Is it A, Mozart, B, Chopin, or C, Wagner? Correct answer? Answer B, Chopin. Turns out that there were several renowned composers who never wrote operas, including J.S. Bach, Brahms, Mahler, Chopin, and Schumann. While these composers were prolific in other musical genres, they chose not to explore the operatic realm. Chopin focused on piano music and never wrote an opera, even though he was a frequent visitor to Paris theaters. So, having covered things to know when buying a guitar, let's close out today's program with Steve Laurie's instrumental, Guitar Genesis. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.